Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Viewpoints on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, a podcast series with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt, where we do like to update you on developments throughout the global market and macro landscape. With that, Burkhard, it's great to be with you as always. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday, and do look forward to our conversation today.
Thanks for having me, Dan. It's great to be here again.
Absolutely. So, Burkhard, it has been an eventful week accounting for the Fed, European elections, an upcoming G7 summit. I also heard about your keynote to a global UBS AI conference in Zurich this past week. So, plenty to catch up on, though. Maybe we could begin with the Fed. You were early this year, Burkhard, to hint that the Fed might leave rates higher for longer. So, I'm curious, why, in your view, has this tightening defied both historical precedent and market expectations, and how much longer will higher for longer continue?
Well, look, I think there are three reasons for this. Number one, you know, the Fed has been seeing inflation moderate without a recession. And read in my book is really because productivity gains are keeping corporate profit margins near all-time highs. And, you know, they're equally facilitating declining prices. I think to understand just how innovation and productivity gains are driving this economic cycle is absolutely critical to understanding why markets around the globe are so strong. Then the second reason, I think, you know, we've been lucky. I've said this before, China's pain is the U.S.'s gain. China's massive properties crisis forced its businesses to discount its prices to keep factories operating. And that's why China's been deflating prices both at home and abroad. I mean, I'm not sure how long this one can continue because China's biggest trading partners, the U.S. and EU, have just started to impose tariffs on Chinese exports, which are ironically becoming a little too cheap for policymakers' liking. And second, we think that China's economy is beginning to recover, and so their need to export deflation might wane. And thirdly, I'd argue, you know, the Fed's invisible hand is still helping in many places. While the Fed is leaving rates higher for longer, let's be very clear, it is still actively supporting the U.S. economy. Remember, in March 23rd last year, it swiftly contained the Silicon Valley banking crisis by stepping in absolutely immediately and thus preventing a much bigger credit crunch when nobody else could have done so. And also, the Fed has been offsetting its rate tightening by easing its formerly restrictive balance sheet policy. It's no longer selling treasury bonds into the market. Oh, and by the way, the last point, the last thing the Fed wants to be seen as is inflating a stock market bubble. I think all of those contribute to that.
So, Burkhard, I do want to take you up on your first point. I know you've mentioned before that innovation and productivity gains are key to understand the current economy and markets. I assume you also discussed that at this week's Global UBS AI Conference?
Absolutely, Dan, because one of the questions that keeps coming up from investors is really how far are we into this current AI boom? And so I try to illustrate why innovation, the power of better ideas, is in fact, I believe, the mightiest power on earth. And, you know, second, many people truly underestimate the law of acceleration and why change over the next 5 to 2 years will be far more than many things, why the world in 10 years will look so far more advanced, at least compared to today.
That's very interesting. Perhaps we can expand on these points a bit further, Burkhard. What exactly do you mean when you speak about the power of better ideas being the mightiest force on earth?
Well, you see, I think the mightiest force that shapes our society isn't money, and nor is it business nor the government. It's the power of better ideas. It's innovation. In business, innovation naturally causes prices to fall and productivity to rise. I would argue that Jeff Bezos did more to fight inflation when he founded Amazon in 1994 than many central bankers ever did, because Amazon put such massive price pressure on all the products it promoted. Or look at solar or wind power. Their cost has fallen more than 90% during the last 5 years. you know what? They're still becoming cheaper and better every year. Or consider the internet, which started in the 1990s and sent the cost of information to almost nothing and thereby lifted productivity for many years. And let me give you another example and really go down history a long way. Back 2,500 years ago, the Stone Age ended. But the Stone Age did not come to an end because the world ran out of stones. There are obviously still plenty of stones around you wherever you look. It came to an end because of the power of better ideas. People found out how to do metal wielding, and that was disruptive, I tell you. It allowed people to make plows and swords as well. That turned hunters and gatherers into farmers and settlers. And so the Stone Age ended. That led to the division of labor when settlements were established, which in turn created large gains in productivity and prosperity. According to anthropologists, humankind doubled from around 100 million to 200 million people, and so a new world order ensued. Now let's fast forward here to about 200 years ago, when in the 19th century, people discovered how to turn fossil fuels into electricity. Industrialization kicked off. And suddenly, cities and high-rise buildings seemed to grow to the sky. Mobility accelerated. Machines multiplied the productivity of labor. Again, a new world order, the fossil age, emerged. That quickly allowed humanity to grow 20-fold from around 400 million people who lived on planet Earth in around 1850 to approximately more than 8 billion people who live on planet Earth today. Today's 8 billion people, never forget, live longer, more prosperous lives than any generation in history. So, today, countries on every continent are seeking to accelerate the next energy transition, because we need to exit the fossil fuel trap. And this time, it being from fossil fuels towards renewable energy, we've already made great progress as the cost of solar and wind power I mentioned has collapsed. But the transition still represents one of the greatest mobilizations of capital in history. It'll require time, financial, political, and human capital on an enormous scale. And the most important one will again be the power of better ideas. Innovation which makes our cars, factories, robots, grids smarter, better, cheaper. And that's where the power of AI comes in. AI is immersive, it's ubiquitous, it's unstoppable.
Well, Burkhart, that does indeed sound like a big wave which is lifting many boats. I'm curious, though, what would you say to investors who feel that this global energy transition will really take decades, not just years?
I think most people underestimate the amount of change that will happen over the next, say, 5 to 10 years. And that's because we often underestimate the accelerating nature of new ideas. Take, for example, the adoption time, which different technologies took to reach 100 million users. Back in 1876, the telephone was invented. It took 70 years up until the late 1950s to hit 100 million users. 10 years later, Carl Benz invented the first car. It took about 35 years for it to see 100 million cars being sold around the world. In 1973, Motorola, the American company, invented the first mobile phone, and it took another 15 years for mobile phones to sell 100 million pieces around the world. In 10 years later, the internet was invented, for which it took around 7 years to reach 100 million users. In 2007, Steve Jobs first promoted the iPhone to the astonished world, and it took 4.5 years until Apple had sold more than 100 million smartphones. 2 years later, WhatsApp was founded in 2009, for which it took 3 years to reach 100 million users. And then, just very recently, in 2022, ChatGPT was launched, and of course, how long did it take for ChatGPT to reach 100 million users? 2 months. So when you see how the time to reach 100 million users is speeding up exponentially, we're going from 70 years, the time it took for the phone, to 2 months, the time it took for ChatGPT to reach 100 million users, then you can just see this AI wave is not, we're not at the end of it, we're at its beginning, in the early inning. It'll permeate every industry and all walks of life. And so during the next 5 years, it'll create powerful new businesses, scientific and technological progress. It'll raise productivity and lower many prices. And that, I believe, is another way of seeing how our Roaring 20s scenario emerges, or another reason why AI really means that you should be invested at all times.
Well, Burkhard, those timelines really help to put it all in perspective. Always fascinating when you put numbers around it, and always a thought-provoking conversation. Thank you, Burkhard, for once again spending some time with our listeners, our clients here on the Viewpoints podcast, and do look forward to continuing our conversation again soon.
Thank you for having me again, Daniel. Have a good rest of the day. Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.